Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody. Bob Stauffer, Brendan Escott, and Kellen Kennedy with you. If you've missed the first 90 minutes of the show, we started with Edmonton Oilers general manager, Ken Holland. We then had former Oilers GM, head coach, and three-time Stanley Cup champion in Edmonton, four-time in his career, Craig McTavish, MACD on Mondays for Contract Equipment Limited. So we've had a heavy Edmonton influence of the show. We're going to head off to the River Cree Resort and Casino Hotline and welcome back a guy who's had a very unique career trajectory. Thomas Drantz, a senior writer at The Athletic covering the Vancouver Canucks. He also is co-host of Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Hello, Thomas. How you doing?
Bob, thanks for having me. You're really bringing it down. You're really bringing it back to the slums with me following McTavish and Holland. My goodness.
Yeah, well, there's some people out there that, like, I think there were some people, because, and you can maybe educate our listeners here, were you not at the start of the year one of the guys that was a little bit worried about the PDO crater that theoretically might occur with Vancouver through their first 20 games? Of course, you weren't counting, or maybe you were, on Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin adding and adding and adding, which the Canucks did all season. But, look, the Oilers are going to be playing a real good team. I think you would agree on that.
Yeah, I would. So, pretty quickly, I entered this season skeptical about the Canucks' ability to be more than, you know, like a mid-90s point team, sort of a sneak-into-the-playoffs type bubble playoff team. And I pretty quickly was on board with the way they were playing. And so, while I knew that the PDO crater would come and in particular would impact their offense, right? Because there was a moment there where the Canucks had the scorers 1, 2, and 3 in the NHL, right? Where they were, they had a goal differential through like the first 30 games that was, like the best anyone had seen since the 1980s Oilers. And so that was sort of a level that I was pushing back against. But I always kind of thought by about 10 games in that this team would have enough outs to figure out a way to keep winning games at least like a solid clip, like at the very least at a solid like 95 plus point clip, which would have been enough to make the playoffs by a lot. Just because their defense had improved, their power play was so good. Quinn Hughes was at such a clearly preposterous level and maintained it all year, especially with his shot rate spiking and sort of his shot-first mentality changing over the course of last offseason especially, although it's sort of a multi-year process that has brought him to the point where he's, you know, the presumptive prohibitive favorite even to win the Norris this year. So I wasn't buying that they were, like, quote-unquote, a PDO fraud team or anything like that. I thought they'd be good the rest of the way, but I didn't think they'd be winning the Pacific Division, outpacing the Golden Knights and the Kings by a fair margin over the course of the regular season. And yeah, it's been impressive to watch, especially because as the regression did happen, and it did in a major way, right? Since the All-Star break, the Canucks were, you know, like a 97-point pace team, 14th best point percentage in the NHL, barely in the black by goal differential 5-on-5. The power play came back to earth. And yet they kept winning games even as things started to go against them because their defensive game improved massively, massively over the course of the year. And, you know, that sort of brings us to where we're at now, where the Canucks scored 13 goals in their six-game series against the Nashville Predators, and they were able to win a series in which they scored one more goal than the Predators on aggregate, right? Won 4-1 goal games, in part because this team is really tough to break down now, but really tough. And not just in the defensive zone. They have a way of playing and defending with the lead 150 feet from their own net, right? They'll be up 2 goals and they're still sending, you know, a guy deep, but really it's still a pretty aggressive 1-2-2 forecheck. They're looking to force turnovers in the neutral zone and then establish possession and really grind teams away with zone time, even though they don't generate a ton of high-quality looks, leaning sort of more heavily on layered screens, which is going to be an interesting dynamic in this series, given sort of the size of the Edmonton blue line and how Stuart Skinner plays. You know, he's going to spend a lot of time looking around big bodies in front and how the Oilers cope with, you know, Vancouver's preferred method of sort of attacking, which is from the perimeter translating into interior shots with a real emphasis on sort of point shots and maintaining possession, like really conservative puck management decisions in the offensive zone. That's going to be a fascinating dynamic to watch, especially given that in some ways we haven't really seen these two teams
yes.
in their current state play head-to-head yet.
Yeah, obviously, Thomas Trantz joining us right now from The Athletic in Vancouver. The two teams only met once after the, 12-game mark of the season for both squads.
Mm-hmm.
And the Oilers were playing in the second of a back-to-back without Connor McDavid for those two games. They lost a 3-1 game to the Canucks. That could have gone either way. That said, Vancouver obliterated Edmonton in the two games that were played at Rogers Arena. I'm going to read you some numbers, okay? When the coaching change was made, 703 points percentage under Knobloch. That's first in the league. You mentioned goal differential, plus 72. Not surprising, that's first.
My goodness.
5-on-5 expected goals for. Edmonton was second under Knobloch. They were first until the final two games of the year. And the final game of the year, they pulled their 7 best players out of the lineup in the game in Colorado. Goals for, they were second. Goals against, they were fifth. Power play, they were third. PK, and they were seventh. I think the goals against and the penalty kill are the two big ones for me, because even the last couple of years, Edmonton was not a, they were fifth in the league for 70 games in goals against under Knobloch. So it's interesting the way, because what surprised me watching Vancouver-Nashville was neither team had more chances. Like the Canucks, I thought Vancouver would win the series in 5 or 6 games. They won in 6, but I thought they'd at least pump them in one of the games, and that never came to fruition.
No, well, this team, honestly, I think they have, even locally, even among the people who've watched them, and especially because first impressions mean so much to people, I think they're sort of viewed as a high-end skill team, and they're really a lockdown systems team. You know, one of the things that this team does is they're able to kind of muddy games up to the point where, it's a one-shot game. And every game in that series, even the one that Nashville won 4-1 with an empty net goal, felt like it could have pivoted on a single shot, right? A single shot, a single miss. That's the difference in most of the games this team plays. And where I'm sort of curious to see what this matchup looks like from a styles make fights perspective is, we all know that the Edmonton Oilers are a totally different monster in terms of containing them offensively than the Nashville Predators are. And yet the Predators, if you look at it from the All-Star break on, or from the U2 concert on, right, that team generated shots and scoring chances at a rate rivaled really only by the Colorado Avalanche, and they generated absolutely nothing against the Vancouver Canucks. Now, we know that the finishing skill up and down the Predators lineup pales in comparison with what the Oilers are about to throw at the Canucks. So we know that it's a totally different magnitude of test here coming up for this Vancouver Canucks team. And yet, I do think it matters that they were able to shut down the Predators to the extent they did. And I don't think they're going to be able to necessarily impose that bumper car hockey flow against McDavid and Dreisaitl 7 times, but can they do it 3 times? Like, if you can do it 3 times and win some low-scoring games, you can put this series into a place where, you need to steal 1 at home on home ice or something like that. And that's sort of where the interest for me rises. Like, the Oilers are obviously priced as heavy favorites in the betting markets. Most of the projection models have that. I think it's fair to say that the Oilers have a higher gear. And then the power play, obviously, is a big difference maker, and it'll be fascinating to watch how these games are officiated, especially in the early going when we're used to more penalties being called. But if this series goes long and the whistles go away, and the Canucks are able to muddy up enough games, you know, that they're decided by a moment, a goal, a shot, a miss, you know, then I do think they can find their way into this series with a puncher's chance of winning it, of pulling off the upset.
They got a puncher's chance all day. What do you, I mean, they finished ahead of Edmonton.
I agree.
In the regular season. Like, now, yep. I got the $5 million a year question here. Mm. Where are we at with Thatcher Demko? Is there any chance that he plays in the series?
Well, it seems remote. You know, he still hasn't skated with the group, but he is getting on-ice workouts with goalie coach Ian Clark following Canucks practices. You know, I remain pretty skeptical about a return timeline here. The injury that he sustained was, you know, the 10 days remaining in April, so we're talking about 2 weeks ago. It was the second non-contact injury in the same knee in a six-week span. You know, the idea that he'd then be back in 3 or 4 weeks strikes me as aggressive in the extreme, and yet we're used to NHL players making aggressive recoveries in the extreme at this time of year. So I would consider it, Bob, just with like a big sort of pale of uncertainty over it. Based on how the Canucks usually manage return-to-play protocols for their goaltenders, he's still going to be a week away at least once he returns to full practice. So even if he'd returned to full practice today, which he absolutely did not, you know, we'd still be looking at later in the series. If he hasn't been a full participant in the Canucks practice by, you know, a week today, I would be shocked to see him in this series. So my view of it is it's a remote possibility, but, you know, we'll see. We know how Wolverine-like the healing abilities of NHL players becomes at this time of year.
We're joined right now by The Athletic's Thomas Drance, hosts a show on 650 Sportsnet in Vancouver as well. Bob Stauffer with you on Oilers Now. Tell me about Artūrs Šilovs.
Yeah, so Artūrs Šilovs, Latvian hero. He was, you know, the player of the World Championships as Latvia won the bronze at the Worlds as the host country last year. And I think that's an important detail, Bob, because, sure, he's inexperienced, 9 NHL games played. But the big stage, like for a Latvian-born kid hosting the Worlds on home ice, you know, he's 22 at the time, and he was lights out in those games against NHL-level finishers, right? Like really good teams, really good players. To me, that matters just because this isn't a player who you'd think would be overawed. This isn't your customary sort of third goaltender, relatively recent sixth-round draft pick type guy. This is a guy who's played pressure games and who's thrived in pressure environments and who just recorded a shutout in an elimination game to punch his team's ticket to the second round, a game in which the Predators had their fair share of chances, by the way, right? Like, as well as Vancouver played defensively, that was the highest event game of the series. He had to out-duel and go shot for shot with UC Saros, and he was more than up to the task. He was fabulous. Perfect, in fact. And, you know, this is a guy the Canucks selected in the sixth round. He's been the apple of Canucks goalie coach Ian Clark's eye pretty much since he joined the organization. Really sort of like the crown jewel in their goalie development pipeline. And honestly, he's had kind of an inconsistent season at the American League level over the course of this year. Like it's been by no means a sort of unblemished success for him across the pro ranks this year. Even when he came up and played 4 games this season in sort of relief of Casey DeSmith, and it kind of looked like they were trending toward leaning on Šilovs, even as DeSmith played decently well down the stretch, he started to steal some starts. Like, he started to eat into DeSmith's selective starts, ultimately culminating with the club selecting him over DeSmith for that crucial game 6 where DeSmith was healthy enough to play. You know, he has battled some inconsistency this year. And there have been moments, like there was a game that they played, he started against the Golden Knights, and Jack Eichel caught him absolutely off guard with just a ludicrous wrist shot. And it's just a reminder that, yeah, at the end of the day, he's played NHL games. He's super talented. He's athletic. He's big. You know, he can do, he's technically sound. He can do a lot, and he's unflappable. He's calm in net. So that's all the good attributes. But there are things that he won't have seen, especially from a constellation of stars as experienced and skilled as the Oilers, right? Like, it's one thing to have a really good game, you know, whether it's against the Predators or the Anaheim Ducks or whatever. It's another to, you know, stop those bad angle Leon Draisaitl one-timers, right? Like, it's another thing to deal with a Zach Hyman in your grill in the blue paint, right? It's another thing to deal with McDavid off the rush. So, a bit of a question mark, but I think one that Canucks fans are feeling really confident in, just given his performance in the playoffs to this point, but also over the course of all of the nine NHL games he's played. He's got a certain cool, composed demeanor to him. You know, even his post-game commentary, like, he just seems like the sort of goaltender that doesn't have a pulse, maybe doesn't know enough to know what he doesn't know, which can be a dangerous proposition. And we know how volatile goaltending is, how frequently we see in the playoffs, you know, some quote unquote no-name goaltender get hot and frustrate, you know, even some of the NHL's best offenses. So it will be fascinating to see how he copes with the Oilers' attack here. But he's definitely a very talented, very athletic young man.
Thomas Trance joining us from The Athletic in Vancouver. Two final questions for you. One tied to management in Vancouver, one tied to management for the team that you used to work for. A thought on the relentlessness of the Canucks, how they've upgraded. Ken Holland talks about you got to have five trees and then a couple shrubs on the back end. Just they've totally rebuilt the defense with the signings of Soucy and Cole in the offseason, the trading for Zadorov, joining Myers on the back end, obviously completely different bottom six forwards as well. They really have changed the complexion of the Canucks support players, haven't they?
They really have, and the trade for Hronek, too, at the deadline last year. They attacked the blue line relentlessly, without question, and then made a host of draft picks, all targeted on the back end. You know, their first-round pick, Volander, and then a couple of third-round picks, one of whom they sent to Calgary in the Elias Lindholm trade after he sort of popped in the OHL this year. So, they knew what the problem for this team was, right? They had the sort of back end where this team had to almost choose whether or not they wanted to score or whether or not they wanted to defend, and just sort of lacked the connectivity to do both. And they solved that problem this year. And they did it in part by upgrading their personnel and in part by designing, you know, a pretty rigid, disciplined style of game that is, you know, I think largely designed to avoid surrendering rush chances against, something this club just doesn't do when they're on their game, although they started to surrender a little bit more off the rush to the Nashville Predators as that series went along. And obviously with McDavid in this series, that's going to be something to watch as we go here. I think when you really consider big picture what the Canucks did and accomplished as a management team this year, if I sort of had to define one through line connecting the success here, it's just been like a really steady stream of floor bets that have effectively eliminated all of the like risk. There are very few sort of hopeful areas in this lineup where you could have expected the bottom to fall out, right? And so you've got speed on all four lines. Like, even this fourth line with Lafferty and DiGiuseppe, you know, not a huge threat to score. They didn't have a great series against the Predators. I don't know that they were like a factor in the series, like Nashville's fourth line often was as that series went along. But with the speed that they have and just the defensive reliability, what they can do is play the Canucks like forecheck happy brand of hockey seamlessly, even when Vancouver's top players get a break. You think about what they did on defense. You think about bringing in Lindholm, who hasn't necessarily, you know, fit in perfectly or seamlessly since he was acquired from the Flames, but he gives them a right-handed draw. He gives them an ace penalty killer.
He's an excellent two-way center.
Yeah, he just fills all these needs. It's like they slowly but surely went about just kind of checking boxes of things they needed, like more size on the back end, reliable guys on the third pair, you know, speed and some scoring punch up and down the lineup, penalty killers, right? Like their first free agent signings, Bluger, Cole, and Soucy. I mean, that's all targeted toward improving a penalty kill that was among the league's worst the last two seasons, and then really got pretty close to being league average this year. An excellent year-over-year turnaround, although perhaps still something where this could be a mismatch as the series goes on. So I just feel like they ruthlessly attacked sort of all of the floor elements. Oh, and I'd add the DeSmith trade. They brought in some goaltending insurance, and we know how big that's been since Demko left the playoffs one game in. So, as a result of sort of those moves, they just raised all the floor sort of elements in just about every facet of the roster. And then when, you know, JT Miller had a career year this year, he's had 99 points before, so it's not about the offensive production. It's that until this year, Miller had never really driven play consistently as a center. And this year he did it while playing toughs. You look at what Quinn Hughes did, leveling up as an offensive player. Like, at the end of the day, it's that Vancouver's best players sort of carried the mustard, as it were, for this team. But they also did it in an environment where they were just so much better supported, so much more ably supported by the fringes of the lineup. They just didn't give much away, and that sort of allowed their stars to make the difference more often than not.
All right. Hey, Thomas, we're running up against the break. Thank you for joining us.
Long answers. My bad, buddy.
That's all right. We'll see you. I'll see you Wednesday morning in Vancouver.
Oh, let's go. Should be fun. Enjoy it.
All right, Cheers. There we go. That is Thomas Drantz from The Athletic in Vancouver. We'll take a timeout. It's 5:54 in Edmonton. You're listening to Oilers Now. Okay, let's see what you guys got. 5:56 in Edmonton. Welcome back, everybody. We hear a lot of comments about the cost of living, including the cost of vehicles. At the same time, consumers are keeping their vehicles longer, and repair costs cost more, and they come into play. The team at Brentridge Ford is working to help you out. They've assembled over 30 Escapes and Bronco Sports that can provide reliable and affordable transportation for fair and open vehicle ownership. Reach out to Rich, Johnny, or Uncle Milt. 780-352-6048. Brentridge Ford in the Auto Mile in Wetaskiwin. Brendan, here you go. Since 2004. So starting in the 2004-05 season, the last 20 years in the NHL, how many playoff series victories do the Toronto Maple Leafs have?
One.
Think of the decade in darkness and how brutal it was for Oilers fans here. The Oilers have actually, since they've come into the league, played one more playoff series than any other team in the National Hockey League. And again, they're the only team the last 3 years to advance in the second round of Western Conference. Yes, they haven't won the Cup. One. Toronto's had some good teams. I mean, even all the criticism Leafs fans have of Montreal at times, they've gone to a Stanley Cup final. They've won a couple conference. They've won one series since the 2004-05 lockout. Oh, my. That is harsh. All right. Who do we got for the global news, weather, traffic update?
Zach Ferguson rest of the way.
There we go. Zach's up next, then Brendan Escott. Reed Wilkins will join me in studio at 6:05 to 6:30. Frank Cervelli at 6:35.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.